If your brand belongs in the heart of the yachting world, this is where it happens. Yachting International Radio reaches over 1 million yachting professionals and enthusiasts every month with 77 million impressions, 220,000 social followers, and 74,000 podcast subscribers. Our hosts are insiders, crew, captains, CEOs, trusted voices shaping the industry. This is targeted, high-impact advertising in a luxury niche. Visit yachtinginternationalradio.com/advertise. Your audience is already listening.
Hi, everybody. I'd like to welcome you back to another episode of Bridge. I'm your host, Alex Seegers, CEO, founder of YCC, co-founder of Name and Champ. Here today, I have a very special guest, somebody I've kind of spoken with through on the outside and outskirts of my career throughout the last couple of years. This is Jess Prost from Prufolio. Would you like to introduce yourself? Tell us a bit more about you.
Oh, God, where do I begin? Hi, I'm Jess. I guess a lot of people know me for being the only and the head of Prufolio. I am an ex-yachtie turned recruiter, absolute classic move. I started when I was 18 in 2012, and I left just towards the end of the 2022 season. So that's about 10 years, and yeah, was completely burnt out and didn't know what to do with myself. Yachting's been my absolute life since 18, so I've lived and breathed it. Grew up in the industry pretty much, and so here I am and dabbling in a few other things as well. So watch this space. But yeah, it's cool. I'm enjoying it. Happy to be here.
Happy to have you. What do you think is now that you've transitioned out of it? What do you think was like the hardest thing of breaking from these golden handcuffs? And what have you seen as being, I'm assuming, a chief stewardess and stepping from that into the recruiting field that I see a lot of people trying to replicate?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, like I said, it's a classic sidestep, isn't it? I think everyone that's on the interior goes into some kind of shoreside support, or if they're lucky, they get a land-based role, again, working for high net worth families. I had that opportunity. I dabbled. I came out and I feel like I spent about a year looking for what to do, but it was actually only 3 months. I don't do well with not working. So yeah, I was interviewing for private households, things like that, and kind of, like I said, I'd done yachting for 10 years back to back, nonstop, pretty much. I was on one boat for 5 years straight. It was I never took my time off. I never took my leave, never had really holidays or anything like that, which never really occurred to me until after I left. So I was burnt out. And I think the idea of going back to working for someone or having an owner or that whole concept just kind of gave me almost, I guess, some PTSD. I learned that I'm probably at a point in life now where I can't really be managed. I don't really want to be. I prefer to just have a very chilled life where I'm in control of things, which is easier said than done, of course. I'm not going to say that I've come out and everything's been great, but yeah, I don't know. I've really enjoyed the transition. I'm really enjoying just having that peace and calm, but it was weird to start with. I think I had a lot of time where I'd be sat having nothing to do, thinking, oh my God, like 4 hours ago, I would have been up putting the first load of laundry on and I would have been having a chat with the girls and setting up the breakfast table with them and whatnot. So yeah, it's a strange transition, especially if you've got nothing to go into. But I think it's really important that if you are stepping off, that you do give yourself that time, because I don't think a lot of people realize how much your body's in fight or flight when you're in the industry and constantly go. So yeah, I've got a lot of really good book recommendations for people if they want to shoot me a message, things like that to tie them over and sort of figure things out. But yeah, I've enjoyed it. It's been good. And I think it's been a very healing process.
That's good. It's good. It's been very healing. Yeah, I understand completely what you're saying. It's just like your body's always in the go-go, but whenever you take that time, you're just sitting around and going, what am I supposed to be doing with myself? Like, it's not, there's nothing to wash. There's nothing to do, nothing to set up. I'm just sitting there. It's kind of us.
I don't even iron my clothes anymore. I can't even remember the last time I used anything remotely the size of a toothpick to clean anything. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's a crazy thing to transition out of, because yeah, it becomes your life. Yachting is this own bubble that you're in. And once you're in it, you're just in this cycle of just repeating the exact same things. And then before you know it, 8-10 years have gone down the line and you're stuck in this battle of, well, what am I going to do after this? Do I make this a full-time job? Other factors start coming in with your life, your family, where you actually see your life going. And it's an extremely difficult thing to do, to take that time and then create something to fruition. So I congratulate you on that, because every day you're leaving the industry and then make something of your own where you're not managed by anybody. No one's breathing down your neck, telling you what to do, or you can set up, and then you're your own boss. So that's amazing. How long have you been running Crewfolio?
That's a good question. I started at 2023, so I think I'm just coming into, I've either just done my third year or I'm coming into it. It depends if you're looking at the tax year.
Oh, you would try to do the one.
Yeah. But yeah, long enough to kind of get into the groove of things now. I think the biggest shift has really been just that mindset shift of kind of going from yachty to, okay, now still, I still have that yachty mentality. If someone calls me at midnight and it's a Sunday and everyone in the house is groaning at me, I'm like, no, I need to take this. It's really important. They're mid-charter. Some shit's going down. Like, I've got to deal with it. Which I think, like, learning how to set those boundaries is quite important, especially if you do step ashore. I think it takes a bit of adapting and a bit of adjustment to kind of figure out, oh, you are actually allowed to have weekends and things like that as well. And that mindset of not everything has to be immaculate and perfect. And it doesn't matter if the milk's running out, you're going to be okay. It's not the end of the world. So, yeah.
Also not feeling guilty when you're taking that time off or where you're just sitting around doing nothing, which for me personally, I've been trying to learn that skill of just sitting around because you're exhausted and doing absolutely nothing. And that's okay. But people outside of you, even normal people, that's what they tend to do.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's funny. I think definitely people look at me funny initially and they're like, why, if I go to the pub and this like a lipstick stain on a glass, I'm absolutely horrified.
What was the biggest challenges you saw as coming and becoming a recruiter right now? Now that you spent a few years in this space, you're kind of seeing Alex, you are seeing how it's ran, how businesses are operating. What do you do differently at Crewfolio? Because in my experience with computers, I've never used them. I've gone through Facebook and word of mouth, and that has worked for me just fine. Mm-hmm. But I've also noticed that the trend of people not having very high opinions of recruiters, then you come along and all my friends and everybody on Name and Shame just speak so highly about you. So are there any things you can identify that sets you apart from traditional recruiting companies?
If any agent watches this, they're going to hate me, but I actually did the job. So I get it. I started out as a deckie. I worked up to lead deck, then fell in love with a chief officer, ended up going into a couple's position with him, ended up on the interior, which I didn't love at the time. But, you know, I've kind of dabbled in all aspects of every department on board. I've been in the galley, I've been in the engine room, I've been in very near misses where the boat's been sinking, things like that. I think when you have that real onboard experience and you've not just walked onto an aft deck for 5 minutes for half a glass of champagne and some charcuterie or whatever, you've got to understand the belly of it. And I think to have the empathy to understand people and also the reasons why they're making certain career decisions, it's not always, oh, that person's just a difficult person to deal with. There's so much more that goes on board that comes into play and is a huge factor in people's decisions, be it I want a higher salary or I want to work on a boat that doesn't have this. And to have those real conversations with crew, I don't ever, even with the clients, I don't take on a client without understanding the dynamics of the boat. If someone says to me, oh yeah, the owner really loves the boat, to me that's like, okay, so how often is he on board? You can't lie about that, because if we're then telling someone, oh yeah, he comes on like 2 weeks of the year and then he's actually a liverboard. There's so many aspects to it that I think some people are quite careless about or just are a bit more motivated by other things. And I don't know if it's maybe I'll become like that in years to come. Who knows? I might turn into a really shitty recruiter that doesn't give a shit. But I think it's just taking the extra time and care to just pay attention and read between the lines as well. And yeah, I mean, I never used recruiters either. I think I've only ever had a job through a recruiter once or twice. And again, I think it's really important to find your people as well. I don't think in an industry as big as ours now, you can go to every single recruitment agency and get the same response. It's all about relationship building. It's all about understanding people's characters. There are some agents that I used to talk to on a really personal level and meet up outside of work and things like that. But then there were other agents where I'd be like, oh, she was a bit strong on the phone, didn't really like that, don't really want to be treated like that, I'm not going to work with them, and I will then also not give them my business. So it's a very two-way street. I think it's an important relationship to have. I think that, obviously, I'm going to say this, I am one, but I think agents do have a place so long as they're operating with integrity.
What do you think is the most difficult aspect? Because since you come from a position of caring and really understanding the full situation when it comes to both sides of that, I imagine that's quite the juggle of trying to manage the expectations of potential candidates and the expectations of either the yacht owners or the captains.
And what are your biggest challenges with facing them?
I think just, yeah, setting the standards and expectations between the two. There's been a lot of times where, you know, I've had, say, for example, a chef who's demanding an extremely high salary and a client who's demanding an extremely high-level chef at a lower salary. There is a conversation that needs to be had rather than just going, oh, well, they're not going to take it. It's like, okay, well, what can I create out of this relationship between the two of you that makes it mutually beneficial? I think there's always going to be a bit of give and take in those situations. I think that expectations need to obviously be met on both sides, but also managed. Some people are away with the fairies on both sides. Some people aren't realistic. There's a lot of egos at play. There's a lot of that. I mean, I can't tell you how many times a day I'm stroking an ego here, there, or everywhere. But yeah, I think the best way for recruitment to go smoothly, I think, is just communication and being very clear and understanding where that ending is for them and where their cutoff point is. And that's really the only tension I've ever really experienced. I mean, I've been quite lucky. I've never really had any bad experiences through the whole recruitment process, even when I was hiring crew on board. I think you just have to be really clear in what you want, what you're looking for, and then you find that and make sure that is the right match and not making a shoe fit that doesn't.
Yeah, you got to find your Cinderella. I mean, take all the preparation work that you do and all of the thinking out everything involved with the process probably helps you avoid all the different pitfalls versus just putting the body in a position and then dealing with the consequences that come after that. The damage expectations, etc.
Yeah, I mean, if we've all had it where we've received CVs and we've given a spec and we've said, this is what we need, this is what the boss likes, blah, blah, blah. And then you get CVs that are completely not hitting the mark at all. And you're like, what are you doing? I could have done this myself. So I think if you're going to be involved in the recruitment process, wherever you're at in it, read what is required. If you're applying for a job and you don't meet any of the requirements, you're probably not going to get a call. And if you're lucky, I mean, I try really hard to contact everyone, even if it's a no, and I really have to grit my teeth sometimes with some people where it's like, either you're just really thick or just extremely ignorant, or I don't know. I mean, yeah, desperation comes into it as well, but ultimately we all have a job to do. And when you're on board, you can't hide behind, oh, I didn't know that was part of the job.
Yeah, no, it's not acceptable, especially with high intense situations, safety on board, service, et cetera. I mean, you have to be very vigilant and you hire people you put in these positions. So that carries me to my next question is, what are your experiences you've seen since you've worked in the IN industry on board for 10 years and now you're in the recruiting aspect? What do you see as the generational shift in IN as IN becomes a bigger market and a more mainstream industry?
I think it's quite hard to answer this one because I started when I was 18 and I started working at 14 and had something like four jobs between those years. And I don't think it's fair to kind of say as a generational thing, oh, well, this next generation are all TikTok and this and that. And I do think tech plays a huge part in distractions on board. And I've definitely seen that and I've heard a lot of complaints about that. But I don't think it's fair to necessarily say that's just one generational group or new crew coming in. I think we all have the same opinion on TV shows and things like that that portray the industry in a certain light. I think there's a lot of Instagram stuff out there that portrays the industry in a certain light. And at the end of the day, we're all just here to do a job and to serve an elite clientele that have high expectations. And sometimes people think that they can just come in and, I don't know, they don't have the correct mindset for that type of setup. And I think that shows very clearly very early on, even in interview stages, when I'm talking to crew, they might not quite be there yet to be conversational enough or understand really what these types of people are like culturally. And I think, yes, you can give people shock therapy and put people into a position if they've got good backgrounds and they've had a good working experience so far or transitional skills. But if you don't have any transitional skills, I think it's very difficult to, I mean, for me, if you're not showing any type of proven experience or something where I can go, oh, that's very relatable and I can understand that you have the mindset to qualify to go into this role, I'm just not going to put you forward. It's not even going to be a conversation. I don't have the time. No one else has the time. But I also think there's a lot of crew coming in that have the tenacity and the mindset to do really well. And I think it comes on a case-by-case basis. And that's where people need to pay a little bit more attention to the piece of paper in front of them and the person they're speaking to rather than just disregarding it as well. So a hard question to answer. I don't know.
I think you answered it quite well. I've noticed name and shame, and then you see it from all the different communities and whatnot. I've had people just send these CVs for some reason. Well, I'm not a recruiter, but they send these CVs. And then you just see kind of, I don't think they really understand what the young industry is. Maybe it's just from a lack of knowledge or a lack of research. And you just see the cool Instagram videos of people on board and having fun experiences, but they don't really understand the depth of detail that is required for this industry, the depth of knowledge and the depth of the presentation and your reputation that holds a lot of value.
Yeah, there's so much more to it as well, I think, in terms of it's not just pouring a glass of champagne, it's not just making a bed, and it's not just smashing out a wash down every Friday. There's a lot of other things that come into it as well. And I think that in terms of mindset and maturity is really important. I think you need to be a people person, regardless of whether you're guest facing or not, because you're still crew facing. You've got to have an adaptability within you, I think. People just see the face of it and go, oh, that looks really cool. And it's such a cool industry. It's brilliant. I would never change it for the world. I think I've had the best time ever. But you do see certain characters come in who really struggle with it and have a really hard time. And that's really difficult to watch, even from a, you know, perspective as a chief stew. I would walk into guest cabins to check on the girls, and one of them would be sobbing in floods of tears because she doesn't know how to handle something that was said in a direct way. Not by me. I was a very nice chief stew. There's things like that. And I think you do have to have a bit of a thick skin and kind of, I don't know, a duck.
I think it comes with your maturity of your kind of experience in the adulthood in a sense. It's like you can have done beforehand. Like I worked construction, logistics, electrical jobs, I did all types of stuff before going to the industry. So I already have my thick skin.
Oh, yeah.
And I was able to operate. Fine. Then you have the younger generation, especially, for example, South Africans, where they got a great upbringing and whatnot. You haven't really had anything to challenge in their lives. And then they come to the industry and they're put on those boats in this position of responsibility. And you have expectations, you have deadlines, you have constant changes of schedule. And then you also have people talking crap or different sort of situations on board where you can't get away from them. They're directly across the hall.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, you need that situational awareness. And I think, like I said, you can't tar everyone with the same brush. People go through different experiences. I've met 18, 19, 20-year-olds who have gone through crazy stuff in their lives and had incredible experiences. And it's shaped them and formed their view on the world. And I think that's really important to consider. But I think if you're talking to someone who, you know, has one-worded answers, they don't really know how to walk into a room and read the room. Those are kind of things that are a bit trickier to teach.
Yeah, and you can't, on the yacht, you have a limited amount of crew, just a bare necessity for safe operational standards. And people need to be very diverse in the way they can handle situations and the way they can do their job. It's not just come in, plug and play and whatnot, which I think with the ability, when you first come in, like I did a lot of day work for the first year that I was in the industry. So I get a really firm grasp on how everything operates, what the expectations are of the job, learning the job, and kind of traversing over into being active crew on a boat and then going on and doing trips and whatnot. But you also have that base understanding of what the job entails, what's required of you, and then you level on top of it. So people get thrown into the fire.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that's the other side of it. When you say people being thrown into the fire, who do you want on your team when shit goes down? Because it does.
Well, it goes down real quick. It could even be a fire. Open the boat. This like a small fire in the engine room. And just because of all the fire drills and all the experience of people on board, it was handled like that. Yeah. But to be able to trust those people is like, my specialty, like what I've developed over the last 6 years is I'm really good at just going into different positions since I do mainly freelancing as I work on my side projects. I could just go in and understand the temperature of the entire crew, understand what my part comes in, work with the personalities and just operate and be a piece of the team. But it takes a lot of time, a lot of experience, and then a lot of humbleness, let's say that, to be able to do that, because as you're dealing with some of the highest egos in the entire world.
No, we love them. They're great.
Yeah, you're great. Oh my God. Yeah, perfect. Everything's perfect. They're such smart. They're both the base.
No, really. It's all true.
Okay, so what would you think, now we're talking about crew, what would you think would be the best tips from you as a recruiter for the green crew, the new crew coming in with the right mentality, right attitude? What were some little tips you can give them about how they can progress their career, how they can secure themselves to make a really good time of their time in the IT industry?
I think be flexible. I think a lot of people come in with a mindset of this is what I want to do. I mean, when I started yachting, I remember I was staying in an apartment overlooking on Teeb, and I was looking at, I think it was Mayan Queen, so a big boat, and I was like, I'm going to be the captain of that in like 10 years. That was it. I was like, and funnily enough, I actually got my first day working on that boat in the engineering department.
That one is huge. Motorcycle.
Yeah. And it was a really cool experience. And I think it's hard to say really, because it just depends on what your background is as well. I think if you're coming into this fresh from school, you've never been on a boat before, you've never even smelt the sea, you can barely swim. Like there are characters like that out there who just need a little bit more time before they go for it. And then you've got other characters who maybe they've just finished a law degree or something like that, and they've never really considered yachting before. Someone they know has done it for a summer and had a great time, and they want to come and try it out for the summer. That's great. But when do you go back to uni? Because it's literally in smack bang in the middle of our season. So there's all these things you need to consider. And I think just actually educate yourself on what it is you're signing up for and what the demands are, because you can't just come in and out. And yes, you get temp roles and things like that, which I think should really just be reserved for experienced crew. I don't think it's not a gap year. It's not something that should be taken lightly. It is a serious profession. It's a serious role, but also there are serious risks. There are a lot of things that can go horribly wrong. So I think just waltzing in thinking, oh, this is going to be a great way to make a bit of cash and whatever, is probably the wrong initial attitude to have. I think if you don't have any prior experience in any service-related industry or any kind of machinery operating, any type of, I mean, it's great if you've got sailing experience and a background there. I think take the time to gain that somewhere, and don't just go to your local coffee shop to be a barista, unless it's an incredible coffee shop and they teach you all the barista skills you need. But I think just be very switched on to the fact that the types of clients you're serving are not the people that are going for a fry up down the road every Sunday. It's a higher clientele that needs a certain level of attention that really it just cannot be learned outside of that industry, I don't think. 5-star hotels, Michelin star, those are all the kinds of markets you want to be targeting, looking at high-end cocktail bars, members clubs, that kind of stuff. Is really what will set you apart from people who haven't done that.
Yeah, because I mean, you get access to the top 1% of the top 1%. I mean, these people are the richest people in the entire world. So there's definitely different expectations, and the amount of money that you're
introduced to and you see on a daily basis, he was absolutely insane. Well, once you've been in it for a while, at least for me, a few times a month, I still look around and I'm like, oh my God, look at that. We're surrounded by like $1 billion worth of assets. Absolutely.
No, I've done that before. I was on Anchor. Where were we? I don't even know where we were. Somewhere in Italy. And I was just like, whoa, it's a lot of money here. It's just kind of crazy.
It's crazy. Especially when I, like for me, working in North Carolina, construction delivery to like some of the poorest areas of the city and state. And then you come here and you're like, oh, that's worth $100 million right there. That guy just paid $300,000. Especially when this one of these charters, this guy was buying all these gifts for this woman. He spent like $60,000 on this girl, just dropped it in an app. Yeah. And it's just like, that's like my salary.
Yeah. But then that's the other side I think is really important, is to have a mindset that is can handle that. Because I think there are some people who have a bit of a chip on their shoulder about the, oh, well, he makes all this money or they own all this, so they can afford this. And that's also wrong. I think that if you are working for clients at this level and caliber, you do have to be mindful of the fact that they are still human beings. They got there, most of them, through hard work. And you have to be careful around that, because I think if you're working, especially when you're in more of a sort of higher level role within the team, I think it's important to think of things like budgeting and how will this affect the owner, and not just be flamboyant with it. It's not your money. It's not, you don't know what's happened in the background. You don't know what's going on in the background. You don't know, are they selling off things to be able to afford the crew members on board? There's a lot of things that go on outside of it that people don't tend to look at or even consider, which I think is quite shocking.
Yeah, and it does a disservice to the owners. Yeah, like you said, they're people too. These are the toys, these are the times. We get to see them when they're spending personal time with their family members, with their friends, in very intimate moments. I think that's a beautiful thing that we get to do. You get to see them hanging out with their friends, letting loose, and this guy runs a $1 billion company. But right now, he's just dancing the Snoop Dogg and downing beers like it's nobody's business.
I mean, exactly. But, you know, I think it is important to remember that you are there to look after these people as well. And it is their safety and well-being, obviously, is always number one. But then also kind of just looking at, oh, I don't know. I had an owner who had the same pair of trousers every single season and he loved them. And it would be like, oh, girls, can we make sure that they're ready for tonight? Because I'd like to wear them. It was a really nice thing. And I just thought, this guy could go and buy like 10 pairs of these, but this is the ones he's worn in. These are the ones he loves. They make him feel good about himself. I just think you need to have a bit more respect for the people that you're working with and around and for. And that's not just the owners, it's the crew as well. I think a lot of people kind of just are in their own little me bubble, which really can be detrimental to your career. It can be detrimental to your experience on board. And yeah, I think those are kind of mentalities that maybe need to stay ashore.
Yeah. And that's another thing, problem that I've seen, especially with Navy Chamber, is just the type of egos and the narcissism that runs really rampant through the industry. I mean, you meet people that think that they're God's gift to this boat. And then, yep, people still need to realize is that you're just somebody here to do your job. You need to do it well. You're in a position of authority. It's your responsibility as a sort of leader in that sound. So watch your crew. Make sure they're okay. Make sure the owner's expectations are met. And not trying to think that it revolves around you. But I also think the exposure to the money, like if you're in Collins and you just get off charter, you're going down, you're having nice dinners and whatnot, talking to all the pretty girls, and it just gets in your mind and it will translate to the rest of your work, which creates sometimes a toxic work environment without people rank my page and really complain about you.
Yeah. I think, yeah, ego is a big one. And I think at the end of the day, we're here to provide an exceptional service for exceptional people. I think yacht crew generally are incredible people. I think the things that we put up with, the things that we can achieve when we all work together are really amazing. But equally, you have to just be a bit more humble, I think, especially with you are employed to make whatever part of the vessel you're in charge of better or improve it or whatever that looks like and to maintain. You're not employed to be a tyrant. That's not your job. And I think to be able to do your job well, regardless of what, you know, what part of the boat you're operating and dealing with, you've got to be able to share that as well with your team, and to be able to not just improve yourself, but the people around you. At the end of the day, one day it's going to be over and you're going to leave, and you want to leave it better than you found it. And you want to leave the owners happier than you found them. Those are such big things, I think, that everyone should strive for on every boat they go on. I mean, I've walked into boats where it's been an absolute shit show and gone, okay, this is horrendous, but I'm here now, so let's see what I can do. Try and improve it, make things better. Okay, this person doesn't get on with that person, so let's maybe stop that, whatever that is. And just everything should be for a progressive vibe on board and not just toxic, stagnant, this is how we do it and it's worked for years. Well, okay, but now it's not anymore, so what are we going to do about it? And just having that approach rather than a bit more of a negative one, which we do see. But I think across the board, generally, it's better than it's made out to be sometimes.
Yeah, I think for every story we hear on Famous Sham or here in public, there's probably 100 stories of things operating smoothly. Everybody.
Yeah, well, no, nobody says it when it's a good thing. It's only when it's something that's hurt them or.
But see, you do like fame posts, see, then you don't get any recognition.
No one does it, though.
Yeah, no one does it. I'm thinking of doing, but this last boat I worked on, just like stir it up a bit. Tell us how good this is. See all the cool stuff you get to do. Because, I mean, this is the most industry. There's nothing like it in the world, I don't think, where you then have the ability to get access and develop relationships with ultra high net worth individuals, like the richest of the richest on a personal level, not just a business level where you're fighting for their passion. You're watching the man eat breakfast with great coffee and you're taking this in on a tow line, throwing them all around with the jet skis and whatnot. And then also when you leave these boats, we get to go travel the world. Like I'm sitting in Spain here in the UK and we get to go see the most amazing things. And I think if you approach it with a very open mind, flexibility, humbleness, and a hard work ethic, it can take you places you would have no idea were a possibility before you act.
Absolutely. I completely agree with that. And I think at the end of the day, you just do a bit of gardening and maintenance and the weeds are gone.
It's just a little bit every single day. That's right. What do you think with like the growing use of technology and the advancements in technology that can help situations on board? So the way I'm seeing it, there's all these different systems that just don't operate anymore. People are just stuck in their ways, not willing to move or get anything new into it. Like, how do you feel about AI and the new technologies coming up?
I think it's incredible. I think it's terrifying. I use tools myself, but I do think that they remove the human aspect in everything. From a recruitment perspective, I honestly barely use the tech that I have. I use it very basically because I just rather pick up the phone and have a conversation. But yeah, I mean, it can be handy. I think in terms of sort of when you're uploading your CV to a recruitment agency, the number one thing, or any kind of job board, really, this goes across the board. You've got to be maybe familiar with ATS systems, which are like a tracking system. You've got to be thinking, how is that going to pick up my CV? When you're in a database of thousands of people, what is going to make your CV stand out and pop up? And the technology is great and it's there, but if you don't know how to manipulate it, then it's not going to work for you. So as a crew member watching this and thinking at it from a recruitment point of view, if you're applying to a job, adjusting your CV to have those keywords that are in that job spec will immediately make that system pull you out of a huge amount of people and put you in a shortlist. There's things like that are great if, like I say, how to manipulate and use them and you understand it from that aspect. But I think technology generally for the industry is good and bad. I mean, we're seeing a lot of amazing boats getting a lot of their marketing online. I think there's a lot of, it's very beneficial for charter companies and just to kind of showcase what you've got on offer. For crew, I think it's good, But I also think it's bad, and I think it depends on the viewership. So if you've got a captain looking at your CV and he's looking you up on Instagram, for example, and you're presenting yourself in a certain way that maybe he doesn't agree with, you've lost the job. No conversation had. If, however, they're really inspired by it and think, oh, this is great, this would be such an asset to the boat, and look how great they are with drone footage and stuff like that, and oh, think of what we could do with it. If you're utilizing it in a way that is showcasing your beneficial skill sets, then yes, great. But if you're using tech to dumb yourself down and get distracted and kind of just get lost in a maze of whatevers, then probably back off a little bit, and definitely don't use it when you're on service and things like that.
Yeah, no doubt to jump to that. It's kind of like a professional profile, these Instagram accounts nowadays, because it's you presenting yourself to the world, and if you would be something that the captain would like to introduce to his vessel, to his crew, his team, the owner, etc.
Yeah, I think just go private. Unless you have something to offer that utilizes those skills. I mean, if you are doing incredible drone footage, or you're a diver or anything like that, or you're, I mean, some of the girls at the moment on Instagram are just absolutely slaying with tablescapes and stuff. I think it's beautiful to see, and it excites me when I see it. It's really nice to see a portfolio like that. But again, if maybe you're not bringing that kind of stuff to the table, then just private.
Yeah, just stay private. What would you think of any tips when it comes to CVs for newer career kind of happening in the industry? Because I see a bunch of CVs and I'm just like flabbergasted by the way these things are formatted.
You know, my biggest pet peeve with CVs is Canva. And I say this with love because I use Canva. I used it all the time. But I've noticed that my system will either spit out a CV that's been done by Canva if it's been uploaded as an image or something. It messes with that whole back end thing, and it doesn't auto pass the information properly and stuff, which creates more work, which is annoying when you're busy, but equally it's clunky. And I feel like it doesn't give you the space to really write what's important. And then people tend to fill the space with stuff that just is waffle. And I think a real classic CV, and I actually saw an incredible CV yesterday. A client sent me her CV just so that I could get a bit of an idea of, I'm looking for a rotational partner for her. And it was one of the best CVs I've ever seen in my life. It was unbelievable. It was so basic. It was so archaic. It was like the picture, your information, and then it was just what she's done in bullet points and how she has improved the onboard experience, be that for the crew or the owners. That is literally all we need to see. And we want to see keywords that are going to encourage that. Oh, she knows what she's talking about, or he knows what he's talking about. I don't want to see that you go on holiday every summer with your family. Like, just say sailing experience, or like keep it really simple. People spend probably about 7 seconds on a CV. Yeah. My eyes go from picture, then I'll go to skills or qualifications, and then I'll look at boats. But before I'm even looking at the size of boats, I'm looking at longevity. If any of that is like, no, I don't read it, I'm straight onto the next thing. And that's how people generally will look. So really looking at, when you're applying for a job, what is asked of you? What are the requirements? Is your CV matching up to that? And if not, don't send it until it is. And it's okay to have 5 different types of CVs. It's okay to be a second stew on one and a chief stew on one. It's okay to be Sue and head chef. But just adapting and having different profiles that meet those things. And once you whittle down what you want in your career, your CV will get much more concise and more succinct, and you probably won't be applying for as many roles, so you won't have to have that. But I think initially starting out, be adaptable, be flexible, and give a shit enough to take the time rather than going to the Blue Lady or the Hop Store or Happy Face, and we all know the great night out. But then the next day when your mate's gone and got a job and you're feeling like crap and your money's dwindling, were you really paying attention and taking the time, or were you just having a good time and trying it out and it's not like really going well? If it's not going well, assess how you're targeting roles and how you're presenting yourself. That goes right down to interviews. Turn up on time. Please turn up on time. Actually, turn up would be great. Like, things like that are just I don't know, common sense, but apparently not. So I think, yeah, how you put yourself forward is how you are read. And sometimes you don't get the chance to speak. So make sure it's doing the talking for you, I think.
Yeah, make sure that all your preparation is showcased before you have a conversation.
Yeah, and it's okay to be big-headed as well. Like, it's okay to sound like an extremely inflated ego on a piece of paper. If you're good at something, like, scream about it. But also, if you're bad at something, highlight that too and maybe say, hey, I'm not so great at this, but I'm really looking forward to developing that in this next role. And I see that you work with these types of tenders or that you're operating in this part of the world, which is something. Make it like, oh, this person's going to benefit from working with us, so they'll stay, and we're going to benefit because they have this and this to offer. So it's a mutually beneficial thing. I never hire people just because it's good for the client. I hire people because it's good for them both.
That's good. And I was thinking, at least for me, as I progress, of being very specific about my intentions, my goals for the next couple of years as I develop my career, just like engineering-wise, what I'm looking for specifically, time I'm looking for specifically. I think that's a very proactive thing to have. And so I'm just saying I have a passion for the sea. All right.
Please. I've been 10 years in yachting and I am not passionate about the sea. I get invited on boats all the time and I'm like, no, I'm all right, actually. Should we just meet for lunch?
let's meet on land. I like being on land. I work on yachting all the time. Being up land is great. Love it. I'm not swinging all the time. This also kind of brings us to something I wanted to talk about. As of this year, we've had quite a few incidents on board where, you know, a couple murders and whatnot, just really bad things that have happened. What's your opinion when it comes to our background checks, regulations, and safeguards when it comes to all the different MCAs and flag states, et cetera?
Honestly, I actually paused recruitment for quite a long period of time this year to kind of really go in and dive into that pool. And it was not fun. And I literally, I'm so burnt out from it. But I think background checks are essential. I just don't see how we can even argue against that. It shouldn't even be a conversation or a question. I think it's easy enough to do. I'm already working with a couple of different companies to figure out the best route to take when it comes to that. I've started implementing it and it's not impossible. And equally, I think, again, going back to what I said right at the beginning, it's really important to just have open, clear communication with management companies, clients, captains, and sort of, even if it takes a little bit of time to get that background check done, either you slow down the hiring process, because that should be important to you that you've got the right people on board, not just for the crew and whatever, but also for the owners. Like, hello, look at who you're working for. And then I have clients that already it takes something like 7 to 14 days for us to do a background check with them, and they're very happy to wait until that comes through. They'll make the offer subject to that. But then equally, I have clients who want someone yesterday, and that's fine, but we'll still run that background check. And if anything comes up that is concerning, that's a conversation that's then had between us and the crew member. It doesn't mean you're not going to get a job. I think it's just when you have things like what happened to Paige, for example, I think I don't even have the words for that. But it's not even just sexual assaults, violence, and even murder. It's things as simple as having a bit of an aggressive background. Maybe you like to smack people about a little bit after a drink or something. Those are really serious issues that need to be known, especially when you're at sea. I literally worked with a chef who I loved dearly, who was fantastic, but when he had a drink, he got aggressive. And there were a couple of times where that really escalated to the point where screwdrivers were pulled out on people. That is unacceptable behavior, and that's not a shock to a lot of crew. It's like, oh, they were just having a bad day. Yeah, fine. But when that then turns into an escalated situation offshore, where you then have, there are situations where police come on board and remove crew members from the vessel, but they can't actually do anything because technically it didn't happen in their jurisdiction because you're on board. There's a lot of things that need tidying up and ribbons put on top of them, I think, that just are at the moment just running rampant and not really oh, well, that thing happened, but it won't happen again for a while. So let's just not worry too much unless it happens again, maybe. I don't really want another stewardess to get murdered. I don't really want to hear about that. I don't really want to pick up the phone to people crying down the phone to me and like grown men saying awful things are happening. We need to tidy up shop, I think. And that's something I'm looking into and trying to work out what the best way is to do that. And I think we're all having conversations behind the scenes to do that. And I think the people that are maybe shouting from the rooftops should maybe take a step back and actually just join in on those conversations and actually take the action.
Exactly. So it's one of my biggest pet peeves is people that just shout and talking and taking the time. I've even gotten like Slack for our people yelling at me as I'm trying to have the conversations of, yes, this has happened. It's for rare these things have happened. But this industry just likes to moan and take their time for a bit, but then nothing changes.
Yeah, now, and nothing really happens. And I think...
And I'm like, a woman was murdered, family lost a daughter. And we're just going to sit here and put up pictures on Facebook, but we're not going to take any like action to actually make sure this stuff doesn't happen. Crazy as like, and onshore world, every single job I've had, either like a bus boy, delivery driver, anything, I've had them now. Full back.
Yeah.
And only once in my career.
People have said things like, oh, but it shouldn't come under the crew's cost. I mean, personally, I would pay for my own background check. I wouldn't have minded doing that. But I do also think that, you know, that should also be something that recruitment agencies confront. I am very happy to cover that cost, especially if it's essentially it comes out of that. What I'm being paid to do is essentially to search for someone, verify them, make sure that they're the right person, but also make sure that they're not like a murdering lunatic. That would be great. Why am I taking money off? Like, I just think do your job properly. And if there are tools in place that can make it just that little bit safer, not exactly 100% safe, of course, but it will severely limit, I think, even just the types of people potentially looking into coming into the industry, which I'm seeing a big shift in as well.
Yeah, I'm seeing it as well. And it makes me very excited seeing all these new entrepreneurs and everybody coming up and saying, okay, we've seen enough. We've seen what's been doing, what's been done, and we can make it better. And they're actually taking action to do that. And it's just,
it's hard. It's a big thing to chew on. And I think it's going to take more minds that, I mean, I've started my petition and everything. I started that way before all of this stuff this year happened. But yeah, I've only got something like 6,075 signatures on it as of today. And it's like, okay, fine. Maybe not a lot of people think it's necessary, but just sign it anyway. Like, it's not a bad thing. It's like, why are you not? I don't know. But I think people do need to come together a bit more. I think there's a lot of people out there, again, the ego thing. I want to be the first to do this. I want to do this all by myself, which is fine. But when you're talking about safety and implementing huge cultural shifts in an environment that is not necessarily big on that, like, the more the merrier, I think. If anyone wants to kind of crack on with that, then call me. I'm so there.
Well, yeah, you're here to hear first, give her a call, and we keep taking these things day by day. So what do you think it's like, just on a personal note, as you're in your entrepreneurial journey, what did you think about just how much commitment and effort it seems probably taking you to get to this point right now and kind of give people an understanding as everybody's looking to the left and the right, courses online is saying, yeah, start your own business, do all this and do all that. You put like some reality on it.
I think it's really hard. I mean, luckily, I know my market extremely well. I can walk into any situation and sort of deal with it. And I think that is a huge thing. If you're not really clued up on what you're doing, that's going to make it harder. So recruitment's not the most sexy or exciting thing in the world. It's also not my end game, but I needed something to tie me over. I needed something to keep me engaged in an industry I love. I want to stay in this industry, but just, I don't want to work on a boat ever again.
One question is going to be, do you miss living on board? I think you had an answer to that.
No, I don't. I do and I don't. I think It's funny. There's things that I really miss, of course, and it's great, but I also really missed things when I was on board that I now have that I cherish so much more, and they had given me more meaning in life than, oh my God, we've run out of oranges. Everything's over. It was so scary.
Fine.
I don't know, just, yeah, little things here and there. At the beginning of every season, I get FOMO. And then I get calls from clients who are also friends who will say, oh, will you just do this trip with us? Like, come on, just do it. Just, it'll be good. And I think about it genuinely. And then I'm like, oh, God. And I actually think about it and go, no, I just don't want to do that to myself. And I did it for a long time. I did it very well. And that's great. I don't need to ruffle those feathers again. But
sure.
From an entrepreneurial point of view, it is really difficult. And I think the more you get into it, it does get easier, but equally harder, because you then start challenging yourself to take on more. And I think that's where it can get a bit murky. It takes every single second of the day, I think, to do anything worth writing about. And it also takes passion. You have to really care about what you're doing, because otherwise it'll just slop off. There have been times where, especially this year, has been really difficult for me. And I won't lie about that. I think a lot of stuff has happened in the industry. A lot of shifts have happened. There's a lot of just noise that is concerning to me and that really kind of breaks my heart. And I've struggled. And there have been quite a lot of periods this year where I've just had to step completely back and go, I actually can't. I don't have the capacity. And that's okay as well. And I think it's really important to give yourself the space to feel things and be a human as well and not just be this machine that's just go. Which again, when you're coming out of yachting, is really hard to do. But yeah, I don't know. I think if you've got a good idea and you think it's got legs, run with it. And at the end of the day, if it doesn't work, at least you tried. It's experience.
Yeah, I mean, go back to working on boats. I think that's one of my biggest things.
They'll always call.
And they'll always call. Just get my microphone, which calls. And then it's like, for me, it's like taking that step back is an extremely valuable thing to do because it gives you sort of a different way of looking at it. Instead of just going like, I need to do this, then you're like, okay, I think step back, I can be a person, and things are going to work. I'll come back better than I was before.
Yeah, I think as long as you're just engaged and challenging yourself and you feel like you're working towards something that you care about and that you're passionate enough about, that's really what you need. Chase things like, how can I be of service and how can I adapt this, rather than, oh, I want to be mortgage free and have a Ferrari. And like, those are great things. But honestly, the more you get into the weeds with it, I think the smaller things matter more. And I can't tell you how happy I am when someone leaves a nice review or calls me and says they were impressed by something I did. That means so much more to me than even a paycheck. Although, don't get me wrong, I love payday. But at the same time, knowing that I've placed someone in the right role, they're genuinely happy, like they're so excited, like that gets me off. I love that. I'm like, yeah, cool. Have a great season. Yeah. I don't know.
I think that's for me as well. It's just such a deep care and passion for what you're trying to do. Why you're trying to help people. So I do this show. I talk to people like you in the industry that I respect and I've seen grow over the last couple of years and seeing what we can actually do to help this industry I love so much, just because it's like I've had the most amazing experiences. I tell people about them and they're just like jaw-dropping. And it's like, how are you capable of doing this? Because I've worked in the audit industry, been smart with my time, money, and had enough time to give myself an education to think of what you can actually do with this. And I think it's important for new crew as the industry starts to, well, continues to grow exponentially every single year, that they need to have these resources that are easily available that they can go to and say, all right, I don't know if they go follow this crap. We can improve here. I feel supported here. I feel safe here because the industry cared about me and their systems in place have shown that they care.
Yeah. I think it's really important to have that care and care for your peers as well. I mean, it's actually really weird because when you go through the whole transition and start speaking to people more that are kind of support side, it's amazing how many people A, don't know what they're talking about, or B, just don't care, or don't, I don't know, there's a lot of representatives out there that are not representing in the way that they should be. And yeah, I think you should do everything with heart, and if you're not, then you're just wasting your time.
Yeah, you're wasting your time. You're wasting Brian's time. That's what I'm seeing. That's how I call this the bridge. Like, talking with crew, being crew, and really understanding that side of Navy SHAN and whatnot, and then venturing over to the support system, to the management companies, to vendors, suppliers, service providers, et cetera, and see what their role is like. Because they just deal with their job and their business on a daily basis, which is fantastic. That's what we should be doing. But there's a conversation that needs to happen in the middle of what everybody on each side is actually experiencing and seeing what these broken systems being taken advantage of. I mean, and then just trying to find kind of the art in the middle, the building from there, so we can make it better. I'm always looking to improve things. I don't think anything's perfect. Nothing's perfect is upstairs. And so everything can be improved, and you can always convert to create a better life for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think knowledge is power. And I think the more you know and understand about the industry and people, the better you will do in it. Yeah, lots of examples of that not happening.
Unfortunately, yes, and social media is taking the blanket off of that and showing you everything that's inside. And a lot of people, I think, they just like to complain or say about it and talk about it, but that's just why growing up sleeves and getting in there and seeing what we can clean up and that.
Yeah, good for you. I love it. I love the determination as well. You guys aren't giving up on it, which is great to see.
Nope. And we'll see what happens in the next few years. I'm terribly excited. I'm excited to see you grow and whatever we can come up with the future together. I think it's very bright, just like the sun is now in fall. Hell yeah. All right, I think that's a good point to end. Any more touches or any personal notes you'd like to give before we stop?
No, just if you need crew, call me.
We had to need your power. Yeah, we're my last guest. He just said this. I think it's really nice for me to end this with pretty much every single podcast. He said, let's just be kind to another. So everybody out there watching, people here on the road, just be kind to each other. And yeah, take care.
Yeah, and give someone a hug, man.
Yeah, give me a hug. I need a hug, man.
Everyone likes it. Everyone needs it. I'm off-tick venting.
All right. Thank you so much. This is Jess Cross with Crew Folio. I'm Alex Deers, the British. And that was a pleasure.